Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Wipeout, is brought to us by the Safaris. We'll be hearing more about and from something called Search Music. That's S-U-R-C-H, which is a combination of surf rock and beach music. Later on in today's program, and we'll close it out as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again today from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Plunges into Music, 2007. Question number one, multiple choice. Which of the following famous women did Frank Sinatra not romance? You can have more than one answer here. Was it A, Marilyn Monroe, B, Marlena Dietrich, C, Gloria Vanderbilt, D, Lauren Bacall, E, Natalie Wood, or F, Twiggy? Which one of those did he not? Which of those did he not romance? Question number two. In 1975, a rock group recorded a song called Walk This Way. After seeing the movie Young Frankenstein, in which the humpbacked Igor directs the visitors to walk this way, what was the name of that rock group? Hint, here's a snippet from one of this band's other hits.
Give it time to look in the mirror. All these lies in my face getting clearer. The past is gone. It went by like dust to dawn.
What's the name of this rock group? Answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. This first transitions piece comes to us from the Associated Press, published on the 13th of June, 2011, entitled Carl Gardner, Coasters Lead Singer, Dies at Age 83. Port St. Lucie, Florida. Carl Gardner, original lead singer of the R&B group The Coasters, has died in Florida. He was 83. Gardner's wife, Vella, said her husband died Sunday at a Port St. Lucie hospice following a long bout with congestive heart failure and vascular dementia. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987, The Coasters had a string of hits in the late 50s, including Searchin', Poison Ivy, and Young Blood. Their single, Yakety Yak, reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 following its 1958 release. It also spent 7 weeks as the number one rhythm and blues song. Article skips down and ends with this. The Coasters had 14 songs on the R&B charts, and 8 of them crossed over to the pop top 40, according to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Their hits were written by the famed team of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. The Coasters parlayed their R&B roots into rock and roll hits by delivering Lieber and Stoller's serio comic tunes in an up-tempo doo-wop style. Beneath the humor, the songs often made incisive points about American culture. For those willing to dig a little deeper, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame entry on the group says, in the 1960s, their hits were covered by the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and other British invasion groups. The regular transition section is Today in Music History, and today is June 24 and 25, and this is from www.thisdayinmusic.com and www.musicorb.com. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1964, Roy Orbison with It's Over. And back a year later after that, 1965 this weekend, it was the Hollies at number one with I'm Alive. 1966, the Beatles with Paperback Writer. And back in 1983 this weekend, it was the Police with Synchronicity. If you were born on June 24, you share a B-Day with Jeff Beck. 1944, he was born June 24th, and Mick Fleetwood. 1947 on June 24th from Fleetwood Mac. Or if you were born on June 25, you share a birthday with Carly Simon. 1945, June 25. Anticipation. And Tim Finn from Split Ends. He was born on June 25, 1954. And George Michael, born on June 25, 1963. Deaths this weekend include, all the way back to 1767, George Philippe Telemann, German composer, dies at 85 years old. And back in 1987, a little bit closer to home here, Budlow Bryant, songwriter, Everly Brothers, Buddy Holly, Bob Dylan, Tony Bennett, Simon and Garfunkel, The Beatles, The Grateful Dead, Dolly Parton, Elvis Presley, Count Basie, Dean Martin, Ray Charles, and The Beach Boy recorded his songs. And back in 2009, Michael Jackson died this weekend at age 50. Miscellany in music history this weekend. Back in 65, it was John Lennon's second book of poetry and drawings being published. And back in 1966, a year after that this weekend, the Beatles' new number one hit, Paperback Writer, is marked by the boosted bass guitar, partly in response to Lennon's impression that Wilson Pickett's bass. This song is also cut louder than any other Beatles record due to equipment upgrades. And back in 1966, that same year, this same weekend, Jackie Wilson was arrested for refusing to stop singing by the police in Port Arthur, Texas. Wilson is charged with inciting a riot. Back in 1969, the Hollies record He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother with Elton John on the piano. Back in 1990, New Kids on the Blocks, Donnie Wahlberg spends 3 days in the hospital after falling through an unlocked trap door midway through a concert in Saratoga Springs, New York. Back in 1992, Billy Joel is given an honorary diploma from Hicksville High School at the age of 43. And back in 1999, Eric Clapton auctions his 1956 Fender Stratocaster named Brownie for $497,500, with the proceeds going to Clapton's rehab clinic in Antigua. And 5 years after that, 2004, Clapton auctions his Fender Stratocaster named Blackie for $959,500, making it the most expensive guitar in the world. Proceeds once again go to his Crossroads Clinic charity. And back in 2009, musical items sold at a pop memorabilia auction in New York City include a set of Bob Dylan's handwritten lyrics for $25,000, a bass guitar owned by Kurt Cobain for $43,750, and a Sgt. Pepper souvenir poster bearing the signatures of all four Beatles for $52,500. And in local rock news, we see this article by David Menconi, published on May 29, 2011. News and Observer, will idle fame make Scotty a flash or a fixture in country? The best part about American Idol is also the worst. Everyone is paying attention, and the spotlight is bright, whether you're ready for it or not. So now that Garner homeboy Scotty McCreery has won Idol, he moves on to a higher level of competition against the likes of Toby Keith, Brad Paisley, and Rascal Flatts. Scotty should get a good ride with his opening single, I Love You This Big, which he debuted on the show Tuesday night, and which was the number one download on iTunes on the morning after his Idol victory. The Idol tour will be a triumphant homecoming for him when it plays the RBC Center on July 27. There will also be great interest in his first album when it comes out this year. Scotty's long-term success is by no means assured, and one potentially ominous indicator appeared this month in the online radio industry trade publication RadioInfo.com. It was a column with the headline, American Idol Finalists Could Get a Chilly Reception at Country Radio, featuring numerous country radio programmers across the nation expressing skepticism about Scotty with surprising bluntness. Article skips down, finding his own voice. The main rap on Scotty is that he has yet to define his own identity and that his deep voice sounds too much like other singers, especially Josh Turner, whose Your Man is one of Scotty's most popular covers. But the Country Music Hall of Fame is full of artists who were tagged as overly derivative early in their careers.
If I made you feel second best.
If you look back at the history of country music, Merle Haggard used to sound like Lefty Frizzell, said Joel Rabe, a New Jersey-based consultant who works with many country stations. George Jones sounded like Hank Williams until he developed his own style. It's what happens. Rusty Walker, a Mississippi-based country programming consultant, said, "You can take that dynamic back even further." It's always been this way, Walker said. Anytime there's a left-hand turn or something new, there's always a group claiming it will be the ruination of country music. You can go back to 1947, when some people were saying, this guy and his roadhouse music will ruin country. We should not allow Hank Williams on the Grand Ole Opry. My rule on things like that has always been wait 3 or 4 years and what they're complaining about will be the center of mainstream country. It may take a while. It's worth noting that Josh Turner, Scotty's closest analog, took years to break through in radio. The article skips down and ends with this. It will help Scotty's cause that he's a personable performer and he's young. It would seem like a male teen answer to Taylor Swift could be huge if producers come up with the right material. He's only 17, and the fact that there's such passion by the fans suggests that country radio will have to listen, Taylor said. But ultimately, it comes down to talent and the right song. If that combination comes together, I think he could have an interesting career. Odds are good he'll ultimately find pretty good success at country radio. This next article comes to us from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Music, 2007, entitled The Story of Music, Part 1. What did the first music sound like? How long did human beings have been playing music? Readers keep asking us these questions, so we decided to dig around for the answers. Ah, one, ah, two. The first musical era, as counted by historical musicologists, is called prehistoric music and refers to all the music played by peoples before the invention of writing and the beginning of civilization. Article skips down. The oldest known instruments are still very old. In 1999, 6 intact flutes were found in a Neolithic site in the east-central Chinese province of Henan. Carbon dating puts them at between 7 and 9,000 years old. They're made from the wing bones of red-crowned cranes, and they have 5, 6, 7, or 8 holes, and some are still playable. The ancients. The prehistoric era ends with the coming of the first civilizations in the Middle East around 4000 BC. The next spot on this timeline is the ancient era, which runs until the fall of the Roman Empire in AD 476. Some big moments in the ancient era, well, back in the 26th century BC, a clay tablet is inscribed with numerous symbols in ancient Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, the area known as the cradle of Western civilization. The symbols describe 26 different instruments, including several stringed instruments like the harp and lyre, and some unknown ones. It also has symbols shown to be musical notation, describing the tuning of different strings within the intervals between them, making it the oldest known notation system in the world. There are also extensive remains of elaborate lyres and harps found in the tombs from the same era. So how about the first song? Well, in about 1500 BC, the port city of Ugarit, now known as Ras Shamra, in modern-day Syria, was a highly developed and cosmopolitan urban center. And back then, someone in Ugarit wrote something on a clay tablet. Well, this was research by Professor Kilmer, and she tried to translate the symbols. Turned out to be a song, and it's the oldest known notated song in the world. And it had not only words to a hymn to Nikkal, the wife of the moon god, it had musical notes, and they weren't that dissimilar to the notes used in the diatonic scale, the do-re-mi scale, that is the bedrock of Western music. Before this discovery, musicologists believed that no such scale existed until ancient Greeks devised one some 1,100 years later. And not only that, the Ugarit song had harmony parts notated. Until then, musicologists had also believed that harmony didn't exist at all in ancient music. But that's not the end of the story, not by a long shot. We'll be having part two of the history of music in a future week.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof.
So what do you know about today's featured genre of music? Search music, that's S-U-R-C-H, combination of surf, rock, and beach music. We start here, as you can hear in the background, with beach music. It's also known as Carolina beach music. It's a regional genre which developed from various musical styles of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. These styles range from big band swing instrumentals to the more raucous sounds of blues, jump blues, jazz, doo-wop, boogie, rhythm and blues, reggae, rockabilly, and old-time rock and roll. Beach music is closely associated with the style of swing dance known as the shag or the Carolina shag, which is also the official state dance of both North Carolina and South Carolina. Recordings with a 4-4 blues shuffle, rhythmic structure, and moderate to fast tempo are the most popular music for the shag, and the vast majority of the music in this genre fits that description. Okay, then what about surf rock or surf music? That's a genre of popular music associated with surf culture, particularly as found in Orange County and other areas of Southern California. It was particularly popular between 61 and 65, has subsequently been revived, and was highly influential on subsequent rock music. It has two major forms, largely instrumental surf rock with an electric guitar or saxophone, playing the main melody pioneered by acts such as Dick Dale and the Deltones, and vocal surf pop, including both surf ballads and dance music, often with strong harmonies that are most associated with the Beach Boys, who are playing in the background now. Most notable surf bands have been equally noted for both surf instrumental and surf pop music, so surf music is generally considered as a single genre, despite the variety of these styles. During the later stages of the surf music craze, many groups started to leave surfing behind and write songs about cars and girls. This was later known as hot rod rock. Surf music is often referred to as simply surf rock, even though the genre has many forms.
Yeah, but I couldn't wait to get back on the stakes. Back to you, the cutest girls in the world. I wish they all could be girls. Two girls for every boy. I bought a 32 wagon and with all of the woody.
And what about Jan and Dean? Well, this is from Behind the Hits. Surf City, Jan and Dean, the Beach Boys and Jan and Dean had an almost identical sound in the early 60s. Most people didn't realize that it went beyond that. They were tight friends. Brian not only co-wrote and performed on this single, he appeared on most Jan and Dean records, though he got no credit and a lot of flack from Capitol Records and his family. This is Dean Torrance's story of the collaboration which produced Jan and Dean's only number one hit, the first number one surf tune, and a memorable representation of the California sound. We heard the Beach Boys for the first time on the radio in maybe 1962. They had a song called Surfing, which was a local L.A. hit. Surfing had a bump figure in it, Dee Dee Dip, kind of the same corny stuff we'd put into our early recordings. It was fairly obvious they had some of our stuff. We were flattered, but they were singing about a West Coast phenomenon, surfing, and we were puzzled about whether or not surfing would mean anything to anybody else in the United States. We thought that singing about surfing was pretty much limiting your target market. But still, it was fun, and it was certainly different. But when Surf and Safari became a hit, author's note, the Beach Boys' first hit, the sport started to get some national attention. Just about that time, a promoter was putting on a record hop at a high school in one of the beach communities in L.A. We were headlining, and the other act, he said, was the Beach Boys. That was the first time we met. They put us together with this band, the Beach Boys, because they were all self-contained, author's note. They played their own instruments, and J&D didn't. They learned six or seven of our songs, so that meant that between the two acts, there were enough songs to do a full concert. They went out and opened the show. They did their 10 or 12 songs, and then they introduced us. We came out and then played the background part to our maybe three hits that we had and a few filler tunes that we figured we'd do together. When it was all done, both of us put together, had played not a quite an hour. The audience really wanted to hear more, and we didn't know what to do. So we turned to the Beach Boys and said, well, why don't we play your songs? By all reports, the Beach Boys were stunned that the stars of the show would ask them to step up and perform as equals. They thought they had to stay in the background. It's a fair guess that the enduring surf rock friendship between the two groups was formed at that moment. And from that same book, Behind the Hits, we see this article about instrumental surf rock. Well, wouldn't you know it, the ultimate surf guitar instrumental was thrown together in a few minutes by a bunch of high school kids who needed a B-side for their demo record. This is about a song called Wipeout. The Safaris, the one that opened today's program, by the way. Before the Beach Boys gave it lyrics, surf music was strictly instrumental. Fathered by Dick Dale and the Deltones around 1960, the sound consisted of a twangy Fender lead guitar, a drum, bass, and a rhythm guitar or sax. If there could be such a thing as a smooth garage band sound, this would be it. Popular instrumental surf tunes included Pipeline by the Shantays, Penetration by the Pyramids, and Let's Go by the Routers. But none of them could approach the enduring popularity of Wipeout. It was a top 20 hit twice in 3 years, reaching number 2 and number 16. And to the 60s high school musicians, it became the standard by which all drumming was judged. If you were a drummer trying out for a local band, you had to play Wipeout, flawlessly, or forget it. Appropriately enough, the guys who created the tune were just high school kids, too. As noted, unlike beach music, which has continued to rely on its classic songs and artists from previous decades, surf rock has continued to attract new artists. Among the contemporary artists incorporating the surf rock sound into their music are groups like the Ravenettes, a Danish indie rock duo. This, then, is the Ravenettes, the Danish indie duo. Their music is characterized by close, two-part vocal harmonies, inspired by the Everly Brothers. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Coupled with hard-edged electric guitar, overlaid with liberal doses of noise, their songs juxtapose the structural and chordal simplicity of the 50s and 60s rock. Other contemporary surf rockers include Jenny and Johnny, Tennis, Jack Johnson, and his surfer buddy Donovan Frankenreiter, playing his hit Butterfly here with a Hawaiian accent. And, of course, there's still Jimmy Buffett and reggae music from such artists as the Marleys and Zachary Richard playing his song, Colinda, here. Another contemporary band heavily influenced by the surf rock sound is the Meltones, and they'll be closing out today's program with one of their many surf rock numbers, Polynesian Adventure. But first, this article on ending on a lighter note. This is from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Plunges into Music, 2007. The first lighter note entry is a question. How do you make $1 million singing folk music? The answer, start with $2 million. In the next selection for the lighter note, the doorbell rings, the lady of the house answers the front door to find a man with a toolbox standing on her porch. May I help you? She asks. I'm the piano tuner, he says. But I didn't send for a piano tuner, she exclaims. No, he replies. Your neighbors did. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? First question had to do with the famous women that Frank Sinatra did not romance, and I gave you several selections there. The correct answer to that, though, was the very last one, answer F, Twiggy. She's the only one of these famous women who Sinatra did not actually date. He romanced Marilyn Monroe, Marlena Dietrich, Gloria Vanderbilt, Lauren Bacall, Natalie Wood, and Lana Turner, but married none of them. And question number two had to do with a 1975 rock group who did a song called Walk This Way, and I asked you what the name of that song was. I asked you what the name of that band was, and the name of that band is Aerosmith. Aerosmith guitarist brought the line Walk This Way back from the movie Young Frankenstein. They saw it during a break from rehearsals, and Steven Tyler then quickly scribbled the lyrics to match that title. Hey, not everyone loves rock music. Nothing profound there, of course, but the fact that TRS does not currently have programs that cover other forms of music have led some of us to consider expanding the offerings within this program. But what do you, the listeners, think about making this program more about music in general and less about rock and roll specifically? Rock would still be a valuable component of the program, but other forms of music, from classical to jazz to country and from local to international, could constitute major sections of each broadcast. Please phone us at 832-5138 and offer your input. This is, after all, your radio station. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long until next time.